Welcome back to Quiver for our 19th episode. For the episode, I always have to do this. Unfinished business. I just got to look it up. I am your host, Michael Cohen. And with me this week, you guys know Amanda is away this week. She's off in Toronto having a good time going to movie premieres and a whole bunch of crazy stuff that I'm sure she'll talk about next week. But in her stead, we have Casey White.
Hello.
Casey, where might people know you from?
They wouldn't. I'm the managing editor over at ShogunGamer.com. So, video game news and reviews and that kind of thing. I'm also a bit of a comic book nerd, as I assume that's why I'm here.
Well, you know, of all the people on Facebook, other than myself, and well, Amanda doesn't really talk about it on Facebook very much, but you are probably the most vocal about Arrow as a show. I think we had a conversation about it at one point.
That's true.
And so when I needed somebody to fill in, I was like, actually, I'd asked you a while ago when Amanda was going to be away for a previous episode, but we managed to get her in here to record. But you're my first choice.
Aww,
to fill in because
I publicly post about it on Facebook.
Yeah, because you actually care about the show, right? So I want people who have a genuine enthusiasm, because I have other friends that I'm sure that I could bring in that could watch an episode with me and talk about what happened in the episode. But you watch the show every week, so that makes a difference.
That's true. All right, fair enough. I'll put that under qualifications then.
Okay. Yeah. So you're the managing editor, is that
correct? Yes.
At Shogun Gamer, so big on the video gaming. Injustice Gods Among Us, have you played it yet?
Well, the demo just came out the other day, so okay. I've played it at conventions and so forth before, still waiting on a review copy that will probably be closer to launch, but yeah, I'm pretty hyped for that game, I'm not going to lie, and primarily because Green Arrow's in it, and my other big favorite, The Flash. So.
Okay, so in your list of superheroes, where does Green Arrow rank?
All time?
Let's just go DC.
He's definitely up there. I would put him at least in my top five.
Yeah? Okay. Yeah. Okay. See, now, before Arrow, I don't know that I would have.
Oh, okay.
I do own a copy of Quiver, and there's not a lot of heroes that make it onto my bookshelf. Like, there's a lot of stuff that I've read, but there's not a lot of graphic novels that sort of get to sit there. So there is a copy of Quiver, which is why we're named Quiver. There's the run that Kevin Smith wrote. And in the Injustice Gods Among Us comic, the digital comic, Harley has the great joke of saying, you call it the Arrow Cave? It's not really a cave, and Arrow, that doesn't make sense. At least with Batman, it's a Bat Cave. It makes sense. You should call it the Quiver, and it's like, yes, that's genius.
That's one of the best lines I've seen in a comic book of recent, actually.
So from what you have played of Injustice, how do you feel about it?
I'm excited.
Yeah.
For me, it's like I love fighting games as a rule. I play Street Fighter kind of semi-tournament level. I'm big into fighting games anyways, but for me, you know, melding the comic book universe, and I'm one of those mutants that actually enjoyed MK versus DC. but for me, the selling moment, other than the character list, of course, because a lot of my favorites are on there, was the kind of like big superhero clash moments.
Yeah.
Specifically for me, getting to see the Flash's super move where he runs the circumference of the Earth and punches the guy.
Yeah.
I was just like, that's amazing. You've got my money. So.
Yeah, it does seem like they've really taken some of like best moments in comics and the best sort of like, if you were this character, what would you do? And, you know, like, how would you utilize those powers? Yeah, like, The Flash is an awesome one. Aquaman, like, people rag on Aquaman all the time, but the new 52 run that Geoff Johns has been writing has actually been pretty wicked. And his super move in Injustice is wicked. Like, you think he's just going to be like, oh, he's going to call some fish or something like that. But what happens is, like, a bunch of tidal waves hit, and it, like, throws a truck at the guy, and then as everybody's sort of being, I don't know, like covered underwater, just a giant shark comes up and just attacks the person.
It's and like, he like tridents him first and then holds him
up
to grab him. And I was like,
yeah, I think Aquaman is a character who he's gotten the short end of the stick for a while.
I've never been a fan, but that is definitely one of my favorite super abilities from the game so far. Is just like spear the guy, hold him up for a shark to take him over. That's pretty good.
Yeah. What's Oliver's? Have you seen Oliver's?
I forget what the lead into it is, but I know that he does something like shoots an explosive arrow or something, launches the guy up into the air, then slides on his knees under him. Fires a grappling arrow, grabs him midair, and then pulls him down so he hits the ground. So it's pretty acrobatic, and it looks pretty good. Looks good.
Because I do it. You know, he's one of those characters that's we've made the comparison before to Hawkeye from the Avengers, and it's like, how do you really, like, when you're hanging out with all these other, like, superhero gods, right? I mean, like, Superman's a god. So when you're hanging out with that dude, or you're fighting him, in Injustice, like, how do your arrows match up? Like, how does that even happen? It doesn't make any sense.
Well, that's the thing, is like, there's going to be some kind of story element that lets him get away with that. Mortal Kombat versus DC, I love, because it was both a cop out and made sense. Because they were like, well, how can, you know, Sub-Zero or Scorpion punch Superman and do anything? And they were like, well, he has a weakness to magic, and this is all magic. So NetherRealm does a good job of that.
It made sense within, not as much, like, I mean, it definitely made sense within the confines of the DC universe, because Superman's, one of his main weaknesses is magic. But more than that, it makes sense within the Mortal Kombat universe, because of the conceit that it's a tournament.
Right.
And it's a mystical tournament. So that, like, the fact that they would be like, well, we're going to have these champions from Earth in this fight, but it has to be a fair fight for everybody, so we're going to depower all of these characters and that sort of thing with magic, so that it's a level playing field, so that it's not a matter of who has the highest power level, but who is the most skilled fighter. Like, that makes sense to me. But I'm
to their credit, those guys are huge nerds too.
Yeah,
I don't know if you've been following along with their production and stuff, but recently they came out with, they've been kind of slowly showing some of the skins that are alt costumes for these guys, and the one they posted yesterday for the Flash is a reference to like a Supergirl Batgirl crossover.
Okay.
And I'm like, that's the most obscure costume you can pick.
Yeah.
Those guys are super nerds, so I don't have any problems with it. I think they're going to be able to come in and be like, this is why this is happening. And the nerds will go, oh, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, Stephen Amell is voicing Green Arrow in the game, which is really cool to see. Like, he's taken ownership of that character in a way that I, like, the only other actor that I can compare on that level is Robert Downey Jr. with Tony Stark, right? Yeah. Like, where it's he's not at that level, because Robert Downey Jr. has literally become Tony Stark, and Tony Stark has become Robert Downey Jr. Like, there is there is no line between them anymore, right?
Well, even when they first cast him, I was like, that makes sense.
Yeah, it's pretty genius. But Stephen Amell, like, he's so, it's almost like he's so grateful for the opportunity to be a superhero that he's like, anything and everything you ever want me to do, I'll do it. Like, I'll be there, bells on. Which is the opposite of the way that Tom Welling dealt with being Superman, right? Like, he was very much pulled back from it and didn't want to be associated with just that. Like, there was a period there where he was doing, like, what, he did The Fog and Cheaper by the Dozen. I mean, like, how much further away from Superman can you get than The Fog on one end?
Right.
And Cheaper by the Dozen on the other end, right? I mean, that's probably just the only people who would cast him. Not saying anything against him, but just when you're a TV actor, you're a TV actor. Especially you're Superman, right? So it's just funny to see the successor to Smallville, to see the star of that doing the polar opposite and just being like, I am becoming Oliver Queen. Like, I am Green Arrow. I love this character. I love this show. And, you know,
it's awesome.
It's really cool to see it. But
I love how he's embraced it. And, you know, like when he first got cast and stuff, I didn't know who he was at all, but mm-hmm. one of my other friends, who's an even bigger Green Arrow fan than I, was explaining to me why he's the perfect cast, that he already was into parkour and everything beforehand, yeah. and I was like, this is going to be awesome, and then ever since, I've been enjoying the show, so.
Yeah, yeah, it's great how he, I mean, it seems like on the show a lot, and there's some of it in this episode, that the actors that they cast, oftentimes they're casting because they can physically do the things that they're being asked to do.
Right.
Which is refreshing, because there's not, like, that disconnect when you see, you know, you never see the person's face when they're doing something awesome. But we saw last week when he was doing the parkour, jumping from building to building.
Exactly.
Like, that was Stephen Amell. And I'm sure that there was some stunt double stuff in there mm-hmm. for safety reasons and insurance reasons, but a lot of what he was doing was him. And that's, it's so cool to see that, because it just allows you to believe that he is the character.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
That a human being, more so, can actually do these things.
And that's the thing, is like, probably from the undershots last week, probably wasn't him jumping the gap, like you say, for insurance reasons and stuff.
Yeah.
But at least when they show him land and he does the roll,
yeah,
that's legit, because he's been doing that for years anyways.
Yeah. He does, like, they get him to jump fences a lot.
Right.
Because I think that's one of those parkour things that they can get it, that he can do it
mm-hmm.
and they can safely allow him to do it, because they're like, he's not gonna fall off of a building
exactly.
and, you know, destroy our show. by being laid up for 6 weeks or whatever, right? So, it seems like every chance they get, they have him hop a fence. But, like, people hop fences all the time. But he'll do, like, the hand over, right. and then, like the kick through, sort of, like that Captain America.
Yeah, exactly.
Jump over the fence. And it's, like, it's just so cool to see him do it. Because then you go, when he's in the hood, you believe that he's a real superhero, right? And they've had Roy Harper's character do some stuff, mm-hmm. but with that, he had the hood up, so I don't know if that was actually Colton Haynes or not. We'll have to wait and see how that goes, see if he's up to the task. But we've talked enough about random things about Arrow. Let's get down to business.
Sounds good.
So we're gonna start the episode right now. For those who are syncing up, so I'm just hitting play now. So our wonderful, every week, our previously on the entire series, which they keep on condensing things more and more, but we always get this shot. Amanda likes to say, because they spent a lot of money on that explosion.
Right.
So it's got to be at the beginning of every episode for the production value. But
it just looks awesome.
Yeah, that and the tennis ball.
And the
thing.
Tennis ball. And salmon bars.
And salmon ladder.
Always
yeah.
salmon bars.
Yeah. But then we get into the little bit of the Vertigo setup, reminding us who Count Vertigo was, and that he's back.
That's the thing with all these previews, like on any of these shows, that always irritates me, is the spoiler of who's going to be on this week.
Yeah, yeah.
Remember this guy? Chances are he's going to be in this episode.
Yeah, exactly. But we're setting up this idea about Deadshot as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're at Verdant. The episode opens at the club, and people are dancing around, having a good time, tripping out on something. This girl is having a little bit too good of a time.
Right away, she's something's up with her.
He's just like, wow,
the colors, man.
Yeah. And then we cut to her in the middle of the street, sort of this. It was a nice reveal. I mean, we saw it in the previews last week, so we kind of knew it was coming.
Right.
But it was a really nice cut where, like, for a second there, you're not sure, is she outside? Is she still in the club? Like, the lights are flashing around her, and then you find out that it's cars, and she gets hit by a car on the patella.
And to her credit, she had a good run before she got hit.
She did, yeah.
In the middle of the street.
Yeah. And it's interesting because she's got the sort of the blunt force trauma to the head, but she's just kind of got this dead look in her eyes.
Right.
Not necessarily looking like she died from the impact of the car. And we'll find out later what that's all about. And then we have Detective Lance showing up to scoff at the club. And this threw me off a little bit until he throws down that he's like, this girl died on the bridge. She was at this club, and you guys dealing drugs. Like, he just comes right out with it. He cuts to the chase.
He's all too willing to, like, throw them under the bus, though. Like, he's already got beef with Ollie. And they've kind of, like, gone back and forth with their two characters. But he's looking for any reason to start it up again.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I maintain... I mean, there's been a couple of hints in past episodes that he knows that Oliver is the vigilante. He just can't prove it. So, like, 2 weeks ago, with the Huntress episode... and the moment when Huntress says Oliver Queen, he has that moment of like, I've got you, I finally got you, and then it's like, oh, he's your boyfriend, isn't he? He's like, oh, slippery Oliver Queen. They're essentially, we kind of talked over it. They were kind of talking about the club and whether or not there are drugs sort of being sold, and there's a little bit of distrust going on between Oliver and Tommy right now. But so Detective Lance is now following up on Count Vertigo at the sanitarium, the insane asylum. These places always seem so sketchy in these CW shows when somebody's in the nut house, as it were. Like, it's really like, it's always this institutional thing, and like, apparently they don't pay their electric bills, and all the lights are always off. Or have a cleaning
staff, you know.
Yeah.
Everything's grimy and dirty. And
yeah, but Oliver's shown up at the same time to question Vertigo, to question Count Vertigo, and the dude is not questionable. He's been drawing his crazy drawings, and he's just a little bit.
I thoroughly enjoy that. Check out this crayon drawing I made for you.
Yeah. Then he's doing his. You said it when we were watching it the first time. His best Cillian Murphy scarecrow.
The tone Batman he's using and everything. It totally sounds like that's what he's going for. Scarecrow.
I felt like there was also like later on the end of the episode. There's also a little bit of Jervis Tetch, the Mad Hatter.
Yeah.
Like, there's a, because he's got that affectation. I'm like, he didn't have that affectation to his voice before.
No.
Like, I don't understand why this is coming in now. I mean, people.
It's what Vertigo does to you. It gives you that voice, apparently.
It makes you talk in a semi British affectation, I guess. So, flash to the island. In this episode, I really would have loved a lot more of this, because this fighting between Slade and I've been saying Shadow, but they just say Shadow, and I think that that's really lame. Like, I don't know, it's because of the comics. I've always read it as kind of like, it's got that Asian kick to it, like Shadow, right? But they're kind of thrown down, and then they comment on how Oliver sucks at fighting. And he's,
and that Slade's been trying but failing to teach him?
Yeah. See, now I feel like he's been coming along well, considering he's been there for like he's been there for a couple months, right? And now,
and he's shown himself to be a fighter in a couple instances, taking down those like random guards on the way and stuff like that.
Yeah,
like he's handled himself a few times, and then Slade just totally calls him out, and he's like, "No, he's garbage, and I can't do anything with him." And I'm like, "Yeah, okay,
yeah." It's all, he's kind of the nerdy kid in class now. Pretty but much. And this was weird. This scene, I guess they were just trying to establish this for his little monologue later. We haven't seen the nephew in a long time. I think possibly since maybe the pilot or the second episode, when the character was established. Like we've definitely seen the sister-in-law / girlfriend a few times, but sort of reminding us, I think, that this is the loose end with Deadshot that's sort of keeping him up at night, the reason why he's so upset about that. But Diggle gets called in on this on the Vertigo business, because the city's pretty much going nuts. This is interesting, because this is one of those things where I feel like the Vertigo thing is going to eventually tie into the Undertaking. or as we call them here, the Cult of the Squiggly Line. And that they're going to use Vertigo to sort of...
I like that.
Make the city go crazy for the undertaking, right?
And I like that line there where he's talking about, like, oh, this new version is way more hardcore. It's addictive. And I was like, isn't the original Vertigo, wasn't that its shtick,
yeah,
too?
Yeah, wasn't that kind of the thing? But I... It just seems like the Batman Begins vibe is... it's sort of like they're... The plot, like, the overarching plot is totally the Batman Begins plot. Definitely. They're just, instead of doing it in 2 and a bit hours, they're spreading that 2 and a bit hours over the course of an entire 23-episode season.
Right.
So we get, like, these little bits that are going to set stuff up. So I feel like they've been setting up Vertigo as a way of... Like, he says the city's on fire, right? Mm-hmm. Sort of, like, setting the city on fire so that... Merlin and his cohorts can swoop in and do whatever it is they're going to do. But they've been really unclear as to what the end game is there. Other than, I think, taking over the city. Like, that's kind of... That's fairly obvious. But,
right.
But I don't know.
The League of Shadows, as it were, for this
Well,
series.
You know, they've mentioned Nanda Parbat, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, that is specifically a reference to the League of Shadows.
Exactly.
As well as Deadman, but I don't think we'll see Deadman in the show. If we do, he will be very far afield from the classic Deadman. But I mean, his mention of the man who trained him in Nanda Parbat, I mean, I think we're supposed to believe that that's
right,
Ra's al Ghul or Ra's al Ghul's father, right? Like, sort of one of those connections to it. But this is weird because he showed up to question Vertigo and then said Vertigo's crazy, and then he's back.
Well, that's, and they set that up too when he's talking to the psychiatrist beforehand, and he's like, he's crazy, you probably don't want to deal with him, and he's like, no, I'll get something out of him, and then gives up faster than anything I've ever seen.
Yeah, he opens the door and goes, well, this guy's nuts.
He just peeks in.
Yeah, I'm gonna leave,
I'm out.
But then he comes back, question more stuff. Well, I guess he's escaped at this point, right? So, or we are meant to think he has. But now, I'm pretty sure we've seen this guy, his partner, this other detective, before. Because they're fond of recurring characters, even if they are sort of minor characters. But they're talking about this guy's bringing up the 10 grand that's missing in the budget at Verdant at Tommy and Oliver's club, and Detective Lance kind of goes, well, I'll look into it, you stay away from it, even though he knows that it's going to cause grief between him and his daughter. But I mean, his line a little bit later of, if I didn't, some other cop would have come looking,
right.
I think we were supposed to believe that this was Oliver, for a second because of the hood, and then he pulls the hood back and you see that it's Diggle.
And this is my favorite part right here. There you go.
Yeah, the person of color has successfully purchased drugs. It's great because it's one of those things that they do on this show where there's another life to the characters when they're not on screen.
Right.
So you know that there was a conversation of them going, like, we need to get a hold of some of these drugs in order to test them, and we also need to feed them these laced bills with the trackers in them.
And all I can picture is Felicity and Ollie just both looking at Diggle and him being like, what?
Yeah, exactly. So, like, the fact that they don't have to play the scene in order for us to get what happened there, like, that's one of the things that these writers do so well. That, and find very germane ways of working in those product placement shots of the surface, which apparently has an Ethernet port. Go figure. I didn't know tablets.
My new
really...
favorite feature of the surface, man.
This is a really cool reveal. We find out that Felicity has been helping Diggle to track Deadshot behind Oliver's back. And Tommy stands at the door at dinner time with a plate of Thai food just in case company shows up.
You know.
That's how he
As you
does
do.
Things. Yeah. I mean, I'm constantly standing at the door with Thai food just in case, right?
Exactly.
But man, Detective Lance really needs to learn to make an appearance every once in a while for personal business so that people don't just expect when he walks through the door that he's there to arrest someone. Because the only time he ever shows up at his daughter's house
right now.
Is like as part of an investigation. But apparently there's a text on Tommy's phone from the person. This was weird because it was a lead that goes nowhere. I guess it was just the reason for him to show up, right?
Well, pretty much, like we were talking about briefly there before, is like their connection between him and then Ollie and now Tommy is he's kind of like the overbearing father on one level, and then he's using his role as the cop to interject himself into these people's lives.
Yeah.
Who he disagrees of the relationship with his daughter.
Yeah.
So he's just like, hey, you're probably a bad guy because I don't want you dating my daughter. So you're into drugs, right?
Yeah.
Drugs? Yeah, all right.
I mean, I think one of the things that they sort of drove home in this episode is that Oliver and Tommy's backgrounds lend to that belief, though, a little bit, right? So,
which they kind of have to reaffirm every couple of episodes because we see them now as they are.
Yeah.
So they have to keep touching back on these guys both used to be kind of scummy, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. This is our wax on, wax off, Santa floor moment. He's got to slap the water. But I mentioned later on, because I think we get three scenes of him slapping the water.
Mm-hmm.
And we get it, right? Like it's this has been done before. They did it. It's in Karate Kid, as I just referenced.
Exactly.
With the paint the fence, wax on, wax off.
Kill Bill, punch the board. You know.
Yeah,
like, it's been done.
Yeah, and it's been done better. And I think like that's the thing where it's like if you're gonna do it, do it. Like that's fine, do it. But if you're gonna do it, don't make it seem like it's some suspenseful thing that's going to play out through the whole episode. If we would have come back and he would have been like, I've been doing this all day, and then they reveal that it's made him super strong for some reason, magically, it must be magic water, but like we know where it's going. We know that it's going to be like the, you know, I've made you do this because now you have this magical ability, right?
That's the thing though, like we make references to the other training montages.
Yeah.
Where they explain why it worked.
Yeah.
This one doesn't.
No, it doesn't.
Slap some water and now you've got strength. And I'm like, where? Karate Kid, like you said, wax on, wax off, was teaching him the momentum of that block string.
Yeah.
So he's like, when he goes to punch him, he's like, that's the same movement. I get it.
And it's muscle memory, right?
Yeah.
So it's built in. Whereas, the thing is that he's not doing it right, first of all. Like, you're not supposed to just hit the water. Your arm's supposed to be completely straight, and you're supposed to slap it, right? Like, that's the... And it's supposed to build up your shoulder strength and that. Like, that's... Because I've seen that trick before, and it is... Like, that is a training regimen, but it's not the sort of thing that'll do it in a day.
Right.
Well, I guess he is kind of beefy already, right? Like, he's in pretty good shape, but...
Okay, can we address this? Because we were looking for something out of that era.
Yeah,
and
so we've just talked over this whole moment of the drug dealer showing up. They're selling drugs to the homeless people, which is the worst people to sell your drugs to. The most homeless-looking guy has, like, just a fat roll of bills.
And I like that Buddy in the car is like, the first guy's like, doesn't have enough money, and he's like, I'm not going to sell to you, and Buddy in the car is just like, yeah, it's good for business. I'm like, that some random bum has it? Like, he's going to go tell all his bum friends that you can get discount drugs here?
It seemed like they were building up to some sort of thing where Count Vertigo was entrapping Oliver, and then this car just explodes, like, just blows the heck up
from
one arrow to the gas tank. I mean, not even the gas tank, that is just the cap, like that.
Yeah,
that's not where the gas is, you guys. Like, that's where the gas goes in, and then there's a reservoir that it sits in underneath the car.
Like you said, like the first time through this too, it's just like he almost looks surprised by it too. It's just like, why did that explode?
Oh, I was fast-forwarding through that thinking that it was scenes from a Vampire Diary. So at the Starling City Aquarium, which is actually the Vancouver Aquarium, And, I mean, I was just there a few weeks ago.
And don't do drugs, but if you happen to have vertigo, hit the aquarium up.
You know, it does kind of make sense. If you were going to take some drugs and have an experience, the aquarium's probably a cool place to go with all the shimmering light and stuff, but... they usually have more lights on than this.
But this guy seems like he's here to pick up women, which is interesting.
Yeah. And I don't know what aquarium security guards are carrying pieces. Like,
that's the best.
I said to you when we were watching it, America is weird.
Yeah.
Like, America is very weird. Because I don't even think there are security guards at the aquarium in Vancouver. If they are, they're sitting in one control room, and they only come out, like, once in a blue moon because somebody's... having a bad day, but...
in case a homeless man is hitting on a woman in front of the fish tank.
Yeah, but a homeless man can't get into the Vancouver Aquarium. It is pricey.
And he had already spent all his money on drugs, so I don't know.
But and then we see Oliver making tea, I guess, as Felicity says, but it turns out that he's making his... like, how many things is his magical medicinal herb gonna cure... before the season's out? I guess he's already used it to cure vertigo, so it's not as much of a stretch. But
I'm kind of half expecting some point somebody gets cancer and he uses it to cure them.
He goes slap the water for a day, take this tea, and then you'll be good.
Exactly.
But he's filled up an arrow with the magical serum, magical Chinese secret recipe. And he's going to go out, and this is a cool moment, though, because they kind of have a conversation about, essentially, Felicity's like, are you going to kill this guy? And he's like, well, no, the people that I killed, they failed the city.
Right.
But this guy is strung out on drugs. The city has failed him. He needs to be helped, not killed.
That's one of my favorite lines from this episode, is him making that realization that, like, it's not always whoever's doing the crime is the bad guy.
And I think episode 1-5, Oliver would not have made that distinction.
Exactly.
So that's sort of a really cool arc to see the character go through, especially as we know that that Roy's going to be hooking up with him at some point to become Arsenal. So... like, that, having him learning the ropes and then he's going to pass it on to somebody else, I think is interesting. And this scene, we get our first mention of Argus, which is kind of like S.H.I.E.L.D., but in the DC universe. I mean, Checkmate's also kind of like S.H.I.E.L.D., but Checkmate's usually up to no good, even though they're a government agency. But Diggle's passing on the information about Deadshot, about Lawton, to... a friend of his who is still in the military or whatever Argus is associated with, so that they can hopefully deal with him. It's going to be really important later. I mean, we saw in the preview, Deadshot's going to be back next week. But it's really important in this episode. I mean, there's some really cool stuff going on between Diggle and Oliver and them sort of switching places almost over the last few episodes.
This part is really interesting to me as somebody, like, especially if you're, like, familiar with Batman, as we are from all the movies and stuff, is, like, it came down to a zoning commissioner that he figures out about Ollie's secret lair, essentially.
Yeah.
Is that what we're getting at right now? He thinks it's being used for a drug-running den, but
that's
how easy it was for them to find out secret room in the bottom of the basement, is, like, a zoning commissioner took a bribe.
Yeah.
And, like, you never see that in Batman or anything. Nobody questions what's under Wayne Manor, but... it so quickly into them having this club, he's like, what's under it?
Yeah. That's weird. It's one of those things on this show where they feel like they address the superhero tropes pretty quickly, as soon as they can, as soon as it's logical to do it, and they kind of space them out. We're not asking that question. We're not distracted from the show by going, like, how have they not figured out that it's Oliver? Well, in the first 5 episodes, Oliver goes out there and goes, you know, he has this whole thing where he proves that it's not him, even though it is him, right? And we saw the crazy guy in the aquarium take 3 of the pills, and Oliver shows up, unfortunately, too late. and the guy is overdosed.
Here's the question I have about this scene, and I don't want to be the guy that just nitpicks on things,
yeah.
But he very specifically put it into an arrowhead, and then runs up and goes to stab him.
Yeah.
If, like, obviously he died at that moment, if he had just fired the needle at the first point, that guy would still be alive.
Yeah, instead of shooting, like, his hand to disarm him.
Well, you could have disarmed him first, but instead of shooting the water, say.
Yeah, yeah,
just
yeah.
Hit him with the needle at that point. You've already disarmed him. He's just sitting there. He decides to hit him with water first, and then runs up with the needle. Just hit him with the needle.
It's because he has to hit him right in the heart, right?
Oh.
And so from the back, it probably wouldn't have worked.
Oh, okay. Get him to turn around first. I gotcha.
Yeah. And then we're back. More wax on, wax off. Well, Shudo does yoga. Very impressive yoga, though. Like, mm-hmm. That whole, like... I can't even stand on my head, much less my hands, much less with my legs crossed,
right.
And maintain it for any length of time.
And so, I do appreciate that they made the Yoda reference at pretty much the same time we did.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You made the joke, and so did they. Yeah, Jedi handstands are the most important part of your Jedi training. That's what I always say, at least. Super important. But so we're getting the background here of Yao Fei's not a bad guy. He took the fall mm-hmm. for the Chinese military, and Fires wants him in order to blame whatever they're gonna do on him. I still maintain that Fires is gonna be connected to Merlin and the Cult of the Squiggly Line, and that they're all like this whole League of Shadows type thing that they're trying to sort of sow.
It seems
chaos,
like, yeah,
right.
Everything that they're doing seems interconnected with what happened on the island versus what's happening now. They keep going kind of back to the, you know, how he originally got there, the people that are there now, showing up now in his life currently. So, yeah, I think that's an easy something that we can look forward to is that tying in.
Yeah. They always have to do these like Laurel and Tommy reminders. That was an odd choice with the spin around. I mm-hmm. feel like they were going for the episode's called Vertigo, so or not called Vertigo, but it's about Vertigo.
Right.
So let's give them some Vertigo at some point. But it had nothing to do with anything. Nobody there is under the influence of anything. So I don't know. Maybe I missed something in that scene, but. I think they just essentially had Laurel show up so that she could be there to read the warrant and sort of be there to witness everything so that later on we'll be able to say, okay, because Detective Lance is showing up with the warrant as Tommy requested, so they're going to go downstairs to see what's in the sub-level.
Exactly.
And now, I thought that Oliver had a card up his sleeve here, like had the ace up his sleeve.
Yeah.
And something was going to happen. It was going to be some sort of a reveal of how clever he is. But that's not what happens. It ends up being just that Tommy
to the rescue.
Hit
yeah.
everything and bailed him out. Tommy's a very odd character at this point in the series. And I'm very curious to see what they're setting him up for. I trust them because they mm-hmm. haven't really steered us wrong with anybody but Huntress yet. I maintain that Vertigo's issue is not the writing as much as it is Seth Gable and his sort
That's
of
fair.
Overacting, overperformance of the character. But Tommy's really important to the plot, I think. So I trust that we're working towards something. So all of these sort of these weird moments of like, is he on Oliver's side? Is he not on Oliver's side? Like, what's going on with him?
Mm-hmm.
Somebody needs to look up 141 and find out what that is. How that's significant? Because I guarantee that it is. So
yeah, they do point out, hey, this is the number.
Yeah,
like the camera zooms in on it. And
yeah. So Green Arrow number 141. Somebody find out what happens in that issue. I'm sure it's important, but they flick on the lights, and I don't know, in the moment before the commercial break, it seemed like Oliver had that ace up his sleeve, like I mm-hmm. said, but in this moment, as Tommy goes to flick on the lights, it seems like Oliver's like, I'm resigned to this, I've been caught.
Right.
Right? And then he's like, wait a second, the
and
basement's
I full
of
I think that's
alcohol.
Totally TV writing, is
yeah.
they're like, we're going to misdirect, so you have to pretend like you got something coming.
Yeah, they sort of play to the brakes.
Exactly.
On DVD, I'm sure that won't work nearly as well.
Probably but not.
So, his excuse for why the inspector didn't show, or why he bribed the inspector, the building inspector, was because the ventilation is crap and they shouldn't even be open. And he just kind of... I love Detective Lance so much. Paul Blackthorne's a genius in his performance. He just kind of looks around and goes... Just his delivery of like... Yeah. It's like he... Everything he needs to say is in one word. Which is like, I don't believe you. I know you're up to something. Whatever it is, I'm gonna figure it out eventually. Mm-hmm. You can't hide it from me forever. But...
You got me.
You
this
got
round.
Me right now. Like, I'm resigned. I'm gonna walk away and let you guys get away with whatever it is you're doing. But I know you're up to something.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot to one look from him for sure.
Yeah, yeah. He's so perfectly cast for that. But now we get the confrontation that's been a little while coming, not a long time coming. But I mean, it seemed like they were getting along so well in the last episode. I guess 2 episodes ago with right. the launch of the club, but now sort of the having to cover for him. I think Tommy's under a lot of stress in this situation.
This scene just feels awkward to me all the way around, because if Ollie's revealed himself, and then specifically because he becomes a hypocrite in this scene,
yeah,
where he's like, you have a dark past, and he's like, so did you, we were doing the same things at all the same time.
Yeah.
Like, if you can change, I can. And then the fact that Tommy is so aggressive in this scene suddenly, he's talking about, like, how he was terrified of the fact that, like, Ollie puts arrows in people. If I did a bad thing, I didn't want you to know about it, because I don't want an arrow in the chest.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of weird leaps in that one scene.
Yeah. But, you know, it's interesting because it really plays into this scene now, because I think that Oliver's aggression towards... Like, he can't do anything about Tommy, because Tommy's kind of right.
Right.
Right. So he's frustrated, so now he's going to take it out on Diggle, because Diggle didn't show up, because he was off giving the information to his friend. And he has this moment of, you know, like, oh, you were too busy going off indulging a personal vendetta, and it's like, I mean, they address it. It's the irony is... ridiculous to the point, but I think sometimes when you're in the middle of something, it's really hard to see that irony. And right. Oliver is so connected to this Vertigo stuff that because of Thea, who is not in this episode, neither is Moira, neither is Roy,
right?
That, which is a might be a first that those characters haven't shown up. Pretty much everybody shows up in every episode of this series, so for them to not be there, I didn't even notice it until just now, but.
Well, that was the only thing for me, is like, like you said, with Moira and the rest, is I only until you mention it right now did I realize they weren't here. But Roy was the one I was looking to see more of.
Yeah.
And he doesn't play any part in this episode.
Yeah. And it would have been good to see Thea and her reaction to some of this stuff so right. that we could have gotten more of a sense of why Oliver's so hell-bent at stopping Count Vertigo again, right? We're getting the reveal here that there's chlorazepam or prozamid, something. I don't know. There's something in it. There's drugs in the drugs that are doing bad things, even though the drugs already do bad things. But it's killing people, essentially. So this is when we kind of reveal that the girl who died at the beginning didn't really die from the car. She was already dead.
Right.
Like, In the same instant, but
exactly.
She was dead from the drugs, not from
same
not
as from the dude car. Has the aquarium.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, so it's somebody's been messing with it, but that's also the thing that's going to lead them back, because who would have access to that much? The asylum would, right? Like
exactly.
the only medical professionals would have that much chlorazepam lying around. And they wouldn't notice it going missing at all. I thought this was really cool, because we were kind of trying to guess where this was going as it was happening.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I caught the orderly when we first saw him.
That's
in that
right.
first scene as
and
Detective
you mentioned
Lance.
It as it happened.
Yeah, as Detective Lance is going up the stairs, I was like, that's the bad guy. That's him. And then we get this thing of Vertigo has escaped, but he hasn't escaped. He made it look like he escaped, and he's running everything from inside the institution.
Exactly.
So Oliver's showing up ready to kill him, but he's still whacked out. Like, he's still gone.
Right, and we were talking about that before, is like how it could all be a show, because if you're the guy that's creating this, you should have the antidote.
So yeah,
he's probably playing it up, and then you see him in the chair.
Yeah, if Oliver's got a way to counteract it, then the guy who created it should have a way to counteract it.
Exactly.
But then we get the reveal of it's the orderly, and then the big reveal, which I felt like they did this well. This was a successful red herring.
Yeah.
It was almost a triple, right? Because they have that moment where I caught the orderly and I was like, it's going to be him. It's totally going to be him. He's helping Count Vertigo.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get that Count Vertigo, he's still in the asylum. And so you go back and then it's like, well, it's not him. So it is the orderly.
Right.
But the orderly is working with the doctor.
Exactly.
And the one part of it that didn't work for me that we'll see in the next scene is I don't understand why the doctor was doing it. I guess money, like that's what he says. But if it's about money, why does he put something in the drugs that's killing people? I mean, that's just bad business, right? The product shouldn't kill the clientele. That's I don't know.
Maybe he's working with the League of Shadows. Maybe. Pretty much.
American manufacturing practices will never cease to amaze me, I guess. That's just how they do things now.
Kill all our clients. And then who's going to buy our drugs? I don't know. Make more people?
It's a commentary on the tobacco industry. That's what it is.
There you go.
It must be. So Oliver wakes up, strapped to the table, so that the bad guy can monologue. Rather than just like you strap him in and then you just inject him now. Like, I don't know why he has to drink it. Just pump him full of the stuff. Or here's an idea. Let's just kill him. Like,
yeah, but that's something that's been around since the dawn of time.
Yeah.
Since James Bond first.
This is the Mr. Bond moment. The laser is slowly making its way towards his.
Couldn't we have just pointed it right at him?
No. Yeah.
All right.
Couldn't we just like just stab him? Just stab. You know, there's so many unsolved mysteries.
He tries to make a reason for it, being like nobody's gonna blink twice at Oliver Queen taking drugs. So yeah. I got you know.
I guess especially when he shows up with green eyebrows and a silly leather hood.
Oh, they're gonna bathe him first.
They're gonna put him in a nice suit. But Oliver is gonna. I don't know. Is he gonna call the Aerojet? Maybe the Aero car with his little. Because it looks like a
it looks
like an alarm beeper, right?
Pretty
like
much
for a car. As he's slowly pulling it out, he loses it for a second, so that he can get juiced.
I love it, but like Eve and I were talking about beforehand. He's got that one gadget arrow in his quiver, you know.
Yeah, and they made a point of showing it to us
exactly
in an insert shot. It's sort of kind of innocuous, but you're like, oh, there's his gadget arrow, and then the second that the clicker comes out, you're like, oh, he's gonna make it explode, and of course the
lurch beelines for it.
Thug. Anytime something beeps, the thug always has to go see what it is. Not quite bright enough to know that explosives beep before they go boom. But this is cool because we get to see the effects of Vertigo again. And Oliver's like, he's really hurting from it because he's got severe tunnel vision. I think that was probably even worse than last time. Thankfully, Diggle shows up to save the day and box the crap out of this guy. And he even does a little bit of wrestling moves.
And Oliver, the people's elbow.
Yeah,
you know?
Oliver, as induced with vertigo as he is, still manages to stab himself in the heart with his serum arrow that didn't get blown up when the other arrows got blown up. Thankfully,
the glass arrow. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah, but and then he pukes up some secret of the ooze. and then one of the best moments in a fight in this series of. Using the paddles,
and I like
saying clear, which was a callback to when Oliver was... was that in Vertigo?
It might have been, actually.
Because he was on drugs at some point.
Right.
I don't remember if that was... if it was Vertigo that was... that he was going into cardiac arrest from. I think it was something else. But I... yeah, the...
And then the best worst line
scene. You couldn't shoot one arrow, so he shoots three.
And as soon as you said it, you knew what was coming. He's like, you couldn't even fire one arrow, a single arrow. You couldn't do it. And I was like, oh, this is going to be just the best worst thing.
I would have liked the shot of him walking towards him, sort of indicating a little bit more that he's got, like, the double vision going on. So he's, because it wasn't 100% clear that he's shooting three arrows, because he may not know where the target is, but that doesn't mean that he doesn't have the muscle memory to shoot an arrow straight, right? So that's what he's relying on. So he'll take three arrows, and if he can't shoot one of you, he'll shoot all three.
Exactly.
Right? But they didn't really communicate it that well. They could have done it a little bit better, but... but yeah, it was kind of a little bit of a trope, but it's one of those things we were talking about the before we started recording about the boxing glove arrow. These are the things that when you're playing with the character, eventually you get around to, right? You have to do them. And then we get this moment of this is the Smeagol moment, where Bilbo realizes how pitiful Gollum really is and lets him live.
Yeah, and, which is a cool moment for the character, but I was totally hoping he was just going to point blank him
in the face at 8 o'clock on a Wednesday night on the CW. That's one of the things is that when they put it in the 8 o'clock time slot, you know that as much like it's always surprising when they don't pull punches, but you know that there's a limit to what they can actually do before 9 o'clock or before 10, especially right.
To the CW's credit, they've been pushing it. One of my favorite things is on actually Supernatural, where a guy got thrown on a bandsaw, and I'm like, why is this on primetime?
Yeah,
that's amazing. So yeah, like you say, there's probably limits.
Yeah.
And I guess they didn't have the bank yet for a point blank shot.
I think we'll see. I mean, you don't put Seth Gable into... He's not a AAA actor or anything, but he is a recognizable actor. So I don't think you put him into that character... without the intent of bringing him back. And they've been very fond of bringing back characters on this show. So now we get the final moment between Tommy and Oliver where Tommy's kind of had enough. And there is this moment he says, you know, you refuse to see what I've become. As in, you know, it's sort of... I mean, they had such great chemistry going before the reveal that Oliver is the vigilante, where he was really connecting with him and stuff about his dad and how his dad wouldn't accept that he could, you know, grow up and that sort of thing. And now Oliver's sort of doing the same thing to him. He's sort of holding him to his past sins. And I think that's where some of this stuff's coming from. But the last scene kind of throws that off a little bit, which is why I say I'm really curious to see what they're doing with that character.
Me too, because like I don't know, this episode specifically for the relationship between Tommy and Ollie just felt like it hit fast forward all of a sudden.
Yeah, I feel like they're moving him into position for the season finale. I think that Malcolm Merlin's gonna die, and or at least I'm gonna use quote fingers for that, a little bit of dink dink on the quote fingers, because I don't think that he'll actually die, but I think we'll be meant to believe that he does, and that will play into Tommy and Oliver's relationship. I mean, I've said that since day one,
a little Green Goblin on this one.
Yeah, since they revealed that his last name was Merlin, and we found out I found out who Merlin was and the connection and all that. But this is what we're talking over, the reveal, the Karate Kid moment where he finds out that now he can pull the compound bow without destroying himself.
Yeah.
So next they're gonna learn how to shoot it, and you know it's I feel like they kind of hit fast forward on that as well, so that we can get. I think they're moving a lot of things into position. Like I said, we've only got a few episodes left And then we're at season finale time. I mean, this is 19. Right. So we got 23 episodes, and the last two episodes are going to be a 2-hour finale.
Right.
As I don't know if we have that confirmed yet, but they've hinted towards it because they get an extra hour.
That makes sense, but yeah, it could have been paced a little more neater. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
I get that they have to line everything up for the finale, but at the same time, there could have been a little more of that conflict between Tommy and Ollie beforehand. Yeah. It seems like both of them were just set off suddenly.
Yeah, but you know what? I think they did also do a good job in this episode of putting the two of them under stressful situations mm-hmm. that would lead to that kind of a blow up between friends who are working closely together and all right, that sort right. of thing. So I think it's sort of an inevitability. The stakes are a little bit higher because of the fact that he's the vigilante and Tommy's father is the bad guy,
right?
Like he's the big bad for the season. So I think that sort of raises things to a different level. Otherwise this would have just been a regular CW spat.
Right,
go
right.
apart and then come back together, but instead what we're setting up is sort of a final confrontation sort of scenario. And we got a little bit of character development from Detective Lance in that last scene.
Who's no longer drinking,
which is really cool because I thought they were going to go a different route with that, where they were going to have him slip back into the alcoholism right. sort of thing that was alluded to really early in the season. But instead, they're going the opposite route of his character developing. Now, I think that what they're doing is they're going to do that so that they can set him up for the fall.
Right.
Right? So that when something really bad happens and he hits the bottle hard,
there's consequences.
It's really going to mean something to us. But I think in light of what happened with Tommy and Oliver, now we have a scene of Oliver and Diggle.
Right.
He's gonna fix things with Diggle.
This is one of my favorite parts of this episode, personally, just because I like that he made the realization that he was kind of out of hand before, and if this is a thing that's going to be happening, he's gonna help his team out.
Yeah.
Which is good, because I never really like those characters that are like, you do everything for me, and yeah. I'll tell you what to do. You can't have yeah. personal stuff. He realizes that there's this personal issue for him, and he's going to help him out rather than...
Well, and he has a real human moment, mm-hmm. which is something that we were talking about with the show, that these characters, particularly Oliver, you expect them to act a certain way because that's what we see TV characters acting right. like. And then what they'll do is they'll have him react like a real person, and it'll be surprising to us where right. you go, like, he goes, you know what? I was being a total jerk before. I was wrong. You were completely right. But let's not make it your personal vendetta. You're helping me with my mission. I'm going to help you with your mission, which is what a friend would do for another friend, right? Like they might have a blow up, but they'll eventually come to that realization.
Now I need you to explain that moment to me, because that one really confuses me. They both have a smirk like, haha, I've got you. Like, I'm like,
now I said that when we watched the episode, that I really feel that Malcolm Merlyn knows mm-hmm. that Oliver is the vigilante, that he's figured it out, because when you beat the snot out of the vigilante and then the next day you find out Oliver Queen is in the hospital from a motorcycle accident.
Right, right.
With injuries that kind of match up with exactly what would have happened if, you know, he was beaten up by you the night before. And I think he had his suspicions before. I mean, in the moment when Oliver is sort of being pegged as the vigilante, that everything points towards him and he sends an assassin to have him killed.
Right.
And then there's also the moment where they're sitting at dinner and he makes the Green Arrow comment, like, why don't right. we call him the Green Arrow? I think that a lot of those things are trying to point us towards the idea that Merlyn does know what's going on. He's smarter than that.
See, at that angle I get, but it's more a Tommy. Like, he yeah. has a smirk on his face yeah. when the camera rotates to the other side. So here's the question that I was wondering about now. Are we setting up a scenario, potentially, where that whole spot or spat between Ollie and Tommy mm-hmm. was engineered to push him into his father? Because maybe that, to the extent, like you're talking about, his yeah. father knows about Ollie. Maybe Ollie has a hint towards Merlyn as well.
Yeah.
And they're kind of lining that up so they're both playing each other to get more information about the other side.
Yeah, I think... I think from the look on Tommy's face, he's clearly up to something.
Yeah.
There is something going on there. It's odd because he's been covering for Oliver the last few episodes.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know that he's got some grand design to go against Oliver.
Mm-hmm.
But
well, yeah, like, I don't like know. I see him being the double agent right now. Like,
yeah.
Tommy is going back to his father, and his father is seeing that as, hey, I've gotten in against Ollie.
Yeah.
And Ollie, I think, potentially, and I could be way off, but the way I see it potentially going down now is there'll be some reveal where they were like, hey, you know, the whole spat that we had was all engineered, and I just needed Tommy to be closer to his father so I could get insight into his dealings.
Oh, so Oliver played into stuff and didn't...
Right.
Like, because we see that with Diggle, he...
Yeah, yeah.
Let's move forward. Yeah,
but with Tommy, he was like, "Yeah, go, whatever." You know,
he didn't. Let him go. Yeah, he didn't say anything. Like Tommy mm-hmm. said, "I quit," and he just let him go. That's interesting. That could be a good reveal. So yeah, maybe this is all sort of by Oliver's design.
That's kind of the vibe I'm getting from it right now. Is like we're gonna get the reveal essentially where they're like, this was all part of my plan.
Yeah.
You know, like, right now it seems like he's... Ollie's the loser in this situation.
Yeah.
He lost his best friend. It's going to the dark side, you know. But I kind of feel like they're setting up a potential, at least, for him to be like, it was all part of the plan. I just needed to find out more about your father.
Yeah.
They're on the same team. That could be something that happens.
Yeah. It's interesting, though, because it seems like Tommy has an angle as well, and I can't figure out...
Right.
What Tommy's angle is, like how he's planning, because we have to remember that Tommy came really close to finding out the truth about his dad,
right?
But he didn't, right? Like the Deadshot sort of fired right at the last moment,
right
before Tommy was going to get the big reveal about the Dark Archer gear and all that stuff.
Right.
So this is interesting. It's interesting to see, like, how much does Tommy know about everybody? Because he did get a little bit. He got the hint of it,
mm-hmm.
of you know, when I left, I was training with some guy, and it's like, well, let's find out more about that. This episode kind of leaves me with more questions than answers,
mm-hmm.
more than anything, but I...
Like you said, that's how you set up for the finale.
Yeah, it's a...
Start asking questions.
This is the sprint to the finish, right? These next few episodes. All right, when we talk about it, we'll just play the preview for the next episode and talk about it. And the fact that Flux Pavilion was a major part of that episode, apparently. Some sort of music. Next week, we've got Deadshot coming back. And... whole bunch of stuff going down with Diggle and Laurel firing a shotgun and
uh-huh.
Oliver shooting arrows into a car. They do a really good job of showing us, getting us excited for next week's episode with
right.
showing us absolutely nothing or, as is usually the case, complete red herrings, right? So
right.
I'm very interested to see what's going to happen next week because that preview really didn't give us a lot other than the fact that Deadshot's coming back.
Exactly.
Which will be...
people wield weapons at some point.
Yeah, people have weapons. But that'll be his fourth appearance on the show,
mm-hmm.
if I'm not mistaken, right? Or is it just his third?
I think it's third.
It's his third, yeah, we were talking about it, because I think he's expected to show up for
the finale as well,
which would be a fourth appearance. But like we said, they're very fond of bringing characters back mm-hmm. in this show, which, like, man, Smallville, you'd get Impulse would show up in one season, then he wouldn't be back for like 3 years.
Yeah, exactly.
so it's kind of refreshing it's refreshing to some extent because when they bring back cool characters like China White and Deadshot,
mm-hmm.
you're like, oh, cool, they're bringing him back. But when they bring back Vertigo or Huntress, you're kind of like, oh, they're bringing them back.
That's the thing I do appreciate about Arrow, specifically because you mentioned Smallville.
Yeah.
The contrast of it, because I am one of those people that enjoys characters and
yeah.
like you mentioned Impulse. I mentioned beforehand, I'm a big fan of speed characters. So when they brought in Impulse, I was like, thank God, somebody that I can attach myself to.
Yeah.
And then he did two episodes in the whole of the series.
Yeah.
And that's it. And this is a lot better, because even though maybe I don't have the personal attachment, I do enjoy Deadshot as a character.
Yeah.
So I like that he keeps coming back. But for anybody that attaches themselves like I did with Impulse, you're getting to see them more than once, you know?
Yeah.
Like three times or four times for Deadshot throughout the first season. Like you said, China White's been back a couple of times.
Yeah.
Those characters don't have to be like Smallville did, almost Monster of the Week with their supervillains.
Yeah.
These guys are reoccurring and have roles in the series.
Yeah.
Even Vertigo, who seemed like he was, like you said, maybe to a lesser extent, somebody that was going to keep coming back, you know?
Yeah.
Keep him alive because he has a role to play.
Well, the cool thing is that they exist in this world. Like, they're not, like you said, you brought up the sort of the Freak of the Week thing.
Right.
That to me, it always feels really contrived, because you're constantly coming up with excuses for new monsters and new bad guys and, you know, new mutations. And like the joke from Smallville, which by like season five they start referencing it, is that the meteor rocks make people crazy. They must, because everybody who's ever come in contact with it has gone crazy and tried to kill someone or has killed people. So, like, with the way that they're doing it in Arrow, bringing back those characters and having them really genuinely tied into the criminal underworld. I mean, China White is a big player in the triad, right? Like, they've shown that she's part of that world. And so anytime the triad gets brought up, you know that China White's going to show up, because she's kind of the face for that part of the gang world. And Deadshot's kind of like he's an assassin for hire. So him reappearing and being the best assassin in the world, apparently, it makes sense for him to show up over and over again. I mean, the having him show up in that the first time, and then we think that he's dead, but, you know, we all knew. I mean, he didn't have the eye at that point, so you know that he's going to be back with the eye at some point.
Yeah.
Especially because that's where he was shot.
Exactly. That was the
thing. But when he gets, so, like, to have him come back and have him coming back again, and sort of these little references to him peppered throughout the last few episodes since his return, it really makes it feel like it's a world to be invested in, rather than just some characters that let's tune in and see what's going on with
who's on this week.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Like what's going to happen? Who are they going to make reference to with this meteor rock infection, right?
Because
they did a lot of, like, nods to characters rather than straight up bringing a character onto Smallville. Whereas with this one, they're bringing characters in, but then they're modifying them somewhat so that they can go, okay, this exists within the world of of Arrow, right? So it's a different way of doing things, but it feels a lot more like the comic books,
right?
Even though, as far as comic bookness, like, this, it's been totally pulled out of Arrow. Like, it's very real world. It's got that Batman Begins, Dark Knight sort of bent to it. I don't know that I would say that it's in that same field, because I feel like Dark Knight takes another couple steps further. Characters like Vertigo definitely keep us grounded in the comic grounded. What's the opposite of grounded? Keep us floating around in the comic book space. But I mean, no superpowers yet, right?
Right.
Definitely superhuman feats, but not outside the realm of possibility, let's say. I mean, they're playing that angle really well, but they're still maintaining the thing that I think people have come to love about comic books, which is, like, the team up, the reoccurring villain, and sort of that the world, especially DC.
Right.
DC is one of those ones. I mean, DC and Marvel both do it, but DC just has such a great rich world of characters, so you can pull in Deathstroke, who's actually a Teen Titans villain, and bring him into a Green Arrow comic because it makes sense because their qualities match up really well, right?
Exactly. Especially for the world that they're creating, right?
Yeah.
Like you said, keeping them grounded. Yeah. It makes sense that he bumps into these like mercenary types, the hired gun, because that's kind of the world they're building. This is a world that runs on those kinds of people.
Yeah, and it always goes back to Oliver and his inner conflict of, like, he's skirting the line, right? Like, is he a good guy? Is he a bad guy? I mean, Deadshot said it the first time he showed up, you're just like me, like, professional courtesy, right? And a few other bad guys have shown up and said that sort of thing to him, and he's always like, I'm nothing like you! And then he kills them. Right. And it's like, but you're exactly like them, right? Like, it's this, like I said, the inner conflict. But they're moving him. They keep on bringing these characters back, showing that, and showing the gulf widening between Oliver and the bad guys. And it's like, to the point where I think towards the end of the season, now he really is a superhero. The decisions that he was making in this episode, his justification,
stuff like that.
Yeah, and his conversation with Felicity about, you know, he hasn't failed the city. The city has failed
him. Exactly.
That's how a superhero talks. That's how Green Arrow talks, right? Not the vigilante. That's Green Arrow, who's like left-wing, liberal. Like, I may have crazy notions about this. I'm definitely, you know, far left, but far left to the point where, like, I'll beat the crap out of some guy in order to help the little guy, right?
Right.
So we're moving towards that, and with Roy being introduced and them stepping up his character and him being made a series regular for season 2, which points towards him becoming Red Arrow, Arsenal, Speedy, whatever. I hold that they're going to call him Arsenal because they'll avoid the Speedy thing because that's already...
You don't think they'll go to Red?
Because
that's what I was figuring, is that he'll be the counterpoint to Green Arrow and they'll just go Red Arrow.
But they're not calling... the vigilante Green Arrow at this point.
No, but for the second season, like, we're leading up to eventually the vigilante, like you said, becoming Arrow.
Yeah.
And I could see them having Green and Red more than I can see Arsenal jumping in.
Yeah.
Like, Arsenal would be a leap, and you could be right, they could do that, but specifically because of the plot points you're kind of talking about, having him be a foil for what Ollie has become, and him instilling these newfound beliefs into his protege, I could see it being more the dichotomy of Green and Red Arrow.
Roy's a really interesting character, and I think that that's going to be where season 2 is going to shine a lot. And we were talking about, like, really hoping to see Roy in this episode.
I'm a big fan of everything they're doing with Roy so far, and I want to see that development. So
and in the comics he's always been really interesting. I jumped to Arsenal because Speedy was a kid, much like Robin was a kid. But then, much like Robin left and became Nightwing, Speedy leaves and becomes Arsenal, right? Mm-hmm. And then eventually becomes Red Arrow when he joins the Justice League. I feel like he kind of needs to earn the Red Arrow thing. Mm. I don't know that, like, they might end up having code names and being, like, Red and Green, like, so that when Diggle is talking to them, like, he can be, like, Red is 15 minutes away or something like that. Like, I feel like they'll probably do something like that. I also feel like we're going to get... We're going to get a thing of, like, once he starts to become that character, they'll have a moment of them training, and Oliver will show up, or Diggle will show up, somebody will show up, and Roy will have been working on the different types of arrows, and somebody will go, oh, that's quite the arsenal you've got. Because he'll have more gear than all, because Oliver's going to, I think they're going to keep Oliver pretty simple, where, like, he's going to be very... Spartan in the way that he does things.
And I
think what they'll do, because they've kind of already brought in Felicity as sort of the gadget person, so that Oliver doesn't have to do that,
right?
So that
she's gonna be Q.
So that she'll be like, I've created this new arrow for you. And then I think that they're gonna play up Roy as, like, being really into all of the different gadgets and all of the different stuff to sort of be like, that's the arsenal aspect of it, right? That, and I think I think there will be a moment where the characters will have a split, where Oliver will be like trying to instill those values that he came to learn.
Exactly.
Through trial and error sort of thing, and through making mistakes. And because Roy is younger and he's a teenager and all that sort of stuff, that he's going to be like, screw you, old man, I'm going to do things my way. Because that's Roy, that is the character once he starts to become Arsenal. He sort of has that rebellious moment against him. I mean, the drugs and stuff come into it and all that. I don't know that they'll go that route. They've kind of already done that with Thea, so they'll kind of be retreading the ground. And it's expected. So it's kind of like with Iron Man in the Iron Man movies.
Mm-hmm.
They're staying away from the Demon in the Bottle storyline because that's what everybody expects them to do. That's sort of like, that's the crescendo note that they want you to hit. So instead of going where people expect you to go, go here, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like they'll avoid that, but I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. Talking a lot about season two, and season one's not even over yet. So, but
they're setting it up, like you said. They are showing these relationships.
Yeah.
They're setting the groundwork, and you can kind of see where they're headed in a lot of these things. Like you said before as well, though, still a lot of questions.
Yeah.
But they are definitely leaving it open for us to start drawing our own conclusions.
Yeah, for sure. Cool. Well, I think that about does. I think we've talked this one into the ground. So where can people find you online?
They can find me writing for ShogunGamer.com.
Okay.
That's my primary wheelhouse. Twitter, The Night Ninja. And, that's about it for me.
Okay, cool. Well, you guys know that you can follow us at Quiver Podcast on Twitter, Facebook.com/QuiverPodcast. From there, you can find the link into our Facebook group. I got to find a way to link that a little bit easier because I'm sure there's probably a way for me to do it with the tabs and stuff. I'll look into it. I'll figure it out. But the Facebook group is up and running. It is humming, and I mean it's more than humming, like it's roaring at this point. This is a note that I wanted to get to, is that on Wednesday nights, let's kind of make it a rule, if you haven't watched the episode yet, it's probably a good idea to stay away from the group.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're not going to post any spoilers on the Facebook page, but people are like, I mean, as of 5 o'clock, people were posting about the episode.
It's really cool that you guys have that kind of community that's essentially like live blogging the episode, and there was a discussion going as the episode was going on, which is really awesome. But as the guy that was waiting to watch it here with you tonight, I was like, oh crap, turn off notifications, I don't want to hear anymore.
That's a good point. If you don't want to get spoiled on stuff, if you don't want to see those notifications popping up, you can turn off group notifications.
Mm-hmm.
So you just have to go into the group, and it's in the top right corner, just underneath the banner and all of the settings and stuff like that. You can turn that stuff off. If you just stay away from Facebook for the hour or two, for those of us on the West Coast, I mean, we can get East Coast feeds like I do, but some people can't be at home
right
at 5 o'clock to watch the episode. So if you're one of those people, avoid Facebook until you've watched the episode, or turn off notifications and stay away from the group, because I'm not going to say don't get in there and talk about stuff until later.
Because I think that's really awesome.
Yeah, because it's wicked. That's the point. That's
if I was at home watching, that would have been awesome. Because then you're watching with like 20 other people or whatever, right?
Exactly. So that's really cool. There's awesome discussions going on in there. There's already some people that are starting to take the reins with a little bit of leadership. I've gotten a couple of emails about last week we asked for people who want to write news. I've got two people who've written emails. I haven't gotten back to you guys yet, but I will get back to you within the next couple of days. So if this episode goes out before I do, know that I have read your emails. I acknowledge you, and I'll be getting back to you guys about how you can help out. If you do want to write for quiverpodcast.com, you can do that. Send us an email, mail@quiverpodcast.com. If you just have stuff that you want to say about this week's episode, or about Quiver in general, or about Arrow in general, like I said, mail@quiverpodcast.com. You can follow me at Arkwulf, ArkWulf, on Twitter. And you can follow Amanda, who is not here. She's off on an adventure at A Konkin, A-K-O-N-K-I-N. And that does it for us this week. We will see you guys next week for... well, what's the title of the next episode? I'm not going to look it up. That'll take too long. But we'll see you guys next week. Quick addendum and correction to what I said just then. We will not see you next week. Arrow is actually going on another 2-week hiatus. It won't be back until I believe. Let me just check. I guess I should have prepared before I started recording, right? The 24th. That's what I thought. So yeah, it's going to be a couple of weeks. 10th and 17th, no episodes. So it'll be repeats on the CW, and we won't be recording an episode, but we'll be back on, well, we'll record on the 24th or thereabouts, and you'll probably get the episode around the 27th. So, it'll be a few weeks, but in the meantime, head over to the group and talk about, Arrow and everything that you love about it. And we will see you guys, once Arrow is back.